is now being recorded.
Hi, Julia.
Oh, hi, Aya. How are you doing?
Just fine. Did you hear the message that it's being...
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
I heard it. So, yeah, anyway, when I'm doing the live stream tonight, I can't see I'm on the tablet. I can hear you, though, just to let you know. So I'd have to go back there and watch to see what you're doing on that end. Because else is using the computer since I got the tablet. Yeah, I hope that's not a problem because I tried. What I tried to do was to see if I could be able to see you and making the call. I can't do both. So.
Okay, that's all right. So I guess the tablet can only stream one video. Is that right?
Well, the only thing, because I have this app working on the tablet, so it streams me, but it takes up the whole space, and if I try to minimize it, I don't know if it's going to come up where I can multitask. I think you need a laptop for that. This tablet has a certain, it just has a certain impediment. So.
Okay. That's fine.
So, sorry about that. I wanted it to work where I could be able to see you and stream, but I was just happy that I got the tablet to work because, like, for me, this is actually, it means it's working. Maybe by next week I can see if I can do both at the same time. But eventually I do need to get a laptop so I can do that.
Yeah, well, I'm actually not doing it both on the laptop. So I'm using
okay. My
phone for the, for streaming myself, and I'm seeing
my
laptop.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. I think it's just a delay. Yeah, I was using my phone for streaming and then looking at the regular computer, but what I had wanted to do was actually be able to stream from the tablet because that's why I got it originally. But
right. It
has an impediment, like, just where... But anyway, I'm just going on about that. So, anyway, was there a topic that you wanted to start off our little conversation with tonight?
Well, I actually thought that you had a lot of topics today.
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I can start if you want. Okay.
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay. I will. Yes, I had this very interesting incident with a water bottle, and you're supposed to show, yeah, you can ban anything, like any kind of weapon. People could still hurt you with anything, like a water bottle. Like, and I'm not going to live my life in fear because some idiot threw a water bottle at me. But I was riding my bike home late at night, and I feel like if you want to do that, you should be able to do that. But I know they want people to feel like you have to be afraid and you can't do that. But I do think this was a one-off incident because this person was coming out of this upscale strip joint. I don't think he's from our city. Like, this place has a lot of, it just has a bad reputation in bringing a lot of people from out of town that are not part of our city. And he started, like, screaming at me, like, why are you out late at night? And all I told him was, because I have every right to be. And then he came back around and he threw a water bottle into my leg. And I was riding my bike. But it's a good thing I was really aware of what was going on around me. At first I thought I rode over a palm tree leaf, which probably sounds different. But they're always doing landscaping and we have many, many palm trees. So sometimes occasionally in that area there's a lot of palm trees and I'll ride over a palm tree leaf. So at first I thought, did I ride over a palm tree leaf? And then I realized I'm riding over a water bottle. And I also realized something, it felt like it hit me in the leg and I saw that guy had drove by and thrown a water bottle at me. So it's a good thing I was aware. I could have been really injured if he had thrown it up higher or if he had thrown it into the chain or if I had not been paying attention and fell off my bike. Like, there could have been many factors. But, yeah, so it just goes to show you could ban anything because we've been talking a lot about that lately, about safety and things.
Yeah, we could ban water bottles or we could ban crazy people who throw them. And I'm for the crazy people who throw them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, being banned. But that's probably the issue is that maybe they, you know, need to just deal with more severely with the people who commit actual violent crimes as opposed to, like, placing restrictions on everybody who, because I don't think most people are going to do bad things, in my opinion. Like, I know everybody right now is like, we will have this more utopian society with the more rules we impose upon people, but it's actually creating the opposite, which kind of just ties into the second thing that I found out today was, I always thought Trace was kind of funny. Am I jumping around too much? Do you want to wait to talk about that and talk about the Google thing first?
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So, anyway, it just kind of ties in with, like, making lots of rules, and it actually penalizes people who have never done anything wrong. Like, I would always think it was funny to sometimes go to this section of Craigslist called the Misconnections. I had no intention of meeting anyone there. I just thought it was kind of a hilarious laugh because people would post the most ridiculous stories about somebody that they saw driving on the 10 freeway, and they thought this person was checking them out, and they wanted this person to message them back. It was just nonsensical, because I doubt, like, if you're driving, you're just going to happen to be, like, checking someone out. Like, just really silly things, or they were wanting to meet people on there. And online personals are just the modern version of the personal ad that have been in the paper for hundreds of years that go back in time. But now, because they've passed this legislation, like, supposedly to protect people from human trafficking, Craigslist could be held liable if people who are human trafficking others and posting ads on Craigslist. So instead of, like, just maybe monitoring the site more, they're telling them that they could be held liable legally. So now Craigslist has to get rid of that section, which to me is not fair, because there's a lot of people that would meet friends on there. Like, they also had just people that were new in a city and they wanted to meet friends. And I'm wondering, like, what if you're not real socially inclined, and then now you, like, that's a way you can't meet people anymore, and then we can't see funny stories anymore. And I sort of felt like now they're trying to take away ways for people to, like, interact with each other. And I also, too, was kind of skeptical. I'm like, well, so they got rid of this free platform where people could meet people, because most people aren't going to use it for the reasons that they think that they're going to use it. There's a few people who do, but most people don't use it for that. And even for the people that they were supposedly trying to protect, I was reading that all of these sex workers were saying it's going to make it more dangerous for these individuals, because now they're going to go back out on the streets and do what they were doing before, but if they do it online. I mean, I'm not an expert on this topic, but they were just saying it's going to make it more dangerous for them, because now they're going to be out on the streets.
I would like to understand what they mean by human trafficking. Are they really saying that they're talking about people who kidnap other people for whatever purposes? Or are they really talking about prostitution where it's consensual and they're really going after that? I mean, what do they mean by human trafficking?
That's a very good point, because that's actually what they were saying a few years ago in California when they wanted to pass that legislation saying that they wanted to do some sort of ban on Craigslist ads for personals back in, I think, 2012. And at first I thought, oh, that sounds good. But then I read this human rights group who said, no, actually it's not, because it's just going to hurt, like, people who are prostitutes, because they just want to make it illegal. And since it's already illegal, they don't like that they posted on Craigslist. But a lot of the people that they interviewed, it was consensual. There were some cases where, yes, it was actual people that were kidnapped. But then again, I feel like, why don't they just let Craigslist deal with it? Why do they make a website?
It's not the publisher's problem. As soon as somebody has been kidnapped, you need to call the police.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah. But I'm talking about, like, with other ads. Like, if there's an unsavory ad on Craigslist and it's reported, then it's taken down. And yes, of course, call the police, but why does Craigslist need to be, like, threatened to be sued because these bad people, these nefarious people, were posting an ad on their platform?
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are several things. It's going against the press, but it's also pretending to protect people and making them out to be victims, and really they're victimizing people who are doing things that they don't like, but nobody is being kidnapped. You know?
Yeah, no, they're not. I mean, most of the people on there posting those ads are not being kidnapped. There were some really weird ads on there, like, I don't get it. Like, we would just kind of laugh at it. It'd be this guy that I want somebody to come to my house and, like, do housekeeping, not wearing, just ridiculous stuff. Like, but it's consensual,
well, you
these
never
people.
Know. I mean, there are people who do housekeeping for other people, too. You know?
It's not, but it was, like, not in an adult context. It's just like you know, it's kind of funny. It wasn't, like, real housekeeping.
Right.
But I don't care. It doesn't bother me. Like, that's their life. We just would kind of laugh about it because it was just all these ridiculous scenarios. Like, but now they, I don't know. Like, I almost thought, they said that they're protecting people that are being human trafficked, but I feel like they're just trying to maybe legislate modern morality. I don't know.
Yeah, I
don't really know. But yeah, it's unconstitutional, right? This bill, like, to go against free press or, like, to keep people from some sort, you know, is it unconstitutional, would you say, this new legislation?
I think it is. I mean, you should be allowed to post any ad you like. You're not supposed to threaten people. You're not supposed to kidnap
people. Oh, no.
But other than that, you should be able to say whatever you like.
Yeah, and most of the ads weren't of that nature. There are some nefarious ads, but like you said, people should call the police. And I also feel that if the ads reported, like if it's something nefarious and Craigslist takes it down and they report the police, that problem has been solved. But what I did hear was there was some entrapment where people would be posting those ads. And in some towns where there wasn't a lot of crime, like, they were just going out and looking for these people that were doing consensual things that, okay, most of us don't want to engage in these activities, but
right.
It was their choice, you know. I feel... Yeah, so...
Yeah, your voice cut out for a while there.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, maybe... Is the connection worse on my phone?
I think it is your phone. Are you using your cell phone now for talking?
Yeah, I am using my cell phone tonight because I'm in the kitchen and my regular phone has a cord on it. So am I cutting out, like, tremendously?
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll try to make do with that, but I think that your house phone was better for the purpose of recording.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
But
okay.
I can hear you now. It's just you cut out for a while.
I could do the edited video for this tonight. Like, I know I didn't do it last week, but I can do it for this one, too, just so, like,
okay.
I do want to get this. Yeah. I was just trying to find another way because I was thinking if I could get this to work, then if I ever went, like, to another setting, I would be able to do the live stream. So it was just an experiment.
Yeah, that's okay. It's all right. Well, you know, I really object to the term human trafficking for a number of reasons, and it's not just for sex workers. So human trafficking, it's like it's taking immigration issues, and it's taking the issue of kidnapping, and they're rolling them all into one, and then maybe it's also putting in sex work. Okay? So really, human trafficking would be taking human beings from one location to another location, usually crossing a border of some sort. And there was a while where they used to entrap people for taking underage girls across state borders. And why did they
do
that? Because on one side of a state line, a girl could be legal to marry at one age, and on the other side at a different age, you know, because each state has its own laws. So that was one of the reasons that it went after people who would take girls across state lines. But,
yeah, that was part of it.
Yeah.
I know some of it's also related to the Utah polygamists because a lot of them were taking underage girls that in some cases where it was not consensual, but they could be of a legal age in one state but not in the other state.
Well, but human trafficking could also be you help somebody from Cuba to escape from Cuba and to come to the United States.
That's true.
Example of illegal immigration, perhaps, and it might be illegal on the Cuban side. It might be that that person could find asylum here. It might not necessarily be that this person is illegally in the United States, but they couldn't leave their country without a human trafficking person who would take them.
That's very true.
So, again, not kidnapping, and shouldn't be wrong, shouldn't be illegal. But they're rolling that all into one. So, and one of the things is prostitution. And they're confusing all of these different things all together. You know, my family left Poland at a time when the Nazis were there, and they were trafficked to pass through the Russian side and through Lithuania, you know.
And it had to be, right? Like, that'd be the only way to get out of the time.
Yeah, right. It was illegal, but what else could you do? And the people who helped them were heroes, in my opinion. And they were
Of course. Yeah, I think so. That's a good point. So all the way that they portray human trafficking is not always like a bad thing, even if it is illegal, because some circumstances you could be escaping a dictatorship, a lethal dictatorship, one that wanted to commit genocide against people. So, of course, they're heroes. And in the case of Cuba, yes, also, because nobody really wanted to live under that regime. People that were brainwashed, that got a few perks, they might think it's okay, but they don't really know anything else. They basically lived under a trade embargo, a very Spartan-like stuff. So some people might support the government. Most people wanted to get out, and I don't blame them. They're very visceral in critiquing the Cuban regime. So, well, not all forms of human trafficking.
When I think about Jean Lafitte, that I wrote about him in two books. One of them is Theodosia and the Pirates, the War of Britain. Well, one of the things he did was he saved French people from the revolt in Saint-Domingue, you know, and people were being slaughtered, and he helped them to come illegally, I guess, but it wasn't a big issue, from what is currently Haiti, but was then Saint-Domingue, and they came to New Orleans. And Edward Livingston's wife was one of the women who did that. Her husband and her brother were murdered, and she survived and was brought over. So, yeah, human trafficking is just a word that I find too confusing. You know, it's a term that is being used right now and being smeared, and it could involve all sorts of things that are actually pretty good.
Yes, that's true. Keep in mind, just because the law is passed doesn't mean it's a good law. It doesn't mean it's actually going to help everything. It seems like a lot of laws be the opposite. Like, the more laws we have, it just seems like they want to monitor people or control people like they're little children, to me. Like, well, even beyond the human trafficking thing, like, the personal ads have been around for several hundred years. In papers, they were a way that people could meet each other, especially back in the 1700s in England, and then they came to America. Of course, they brought that concept over here because people didn't always have a large social circle outside of maybe an arranged marriage. This was a way that maybe you could meet somebody that your family didn't want you to marry. Like, I've heard stories about how people were able to meet someone that they had more things in common with. Because that's what a personal ad essentially is. But now, under that category, Craigslist says nobody can post any kind of personal ad to meet a friend, to meet, like, a running buddy, to start, like, a club, to maybe find a date, because it's under that category, and it might be human trafficking.
Well, I mean, so what are they going to do with all the dating sites? Are they going to take all the dating sites down?
Oh, no, they're not going to take those down, and that's kind of what I was thinking about, too. I'm like, that's interesting. Okay, so Craigslist is this free platform,
And I suppose if they wanted to start charging, and they weren't, but they're not happy with that, by the way. They have a long paragraph saying that they regret they have to take it away, but they're afraid. And
well,
somebody posts.
I mean, they should not be more responsible if they don't take any money than somebody like Tinder that takes money.
Oh, I know. But I guess what it is because the theory is that under that section, anybody could post, like, a prostitution ad, and if somebody is being forced into prostitution and it's, like, incorrectly posted in that section, and then Craigslist could be held liable and it could be sued because I guess they already are facing the lawsuits, and so is Reddit.
Yeah,
so
but
they've just gotten.
Why Craigslist? Why not the
other
side?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't really understand the rationale, but now, like, people are probably going to go to the paid sites and make profile. I don't know. It doesn't really make any sense. It's kind of stupid, is what it is. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like,
no.
Unless you have a theory on it, like, why they might be doing that. I mean, I have thoughts, but I can't really tell you.
I don't know what's going on right now in the Yellow Pages, but I can tell you that when I was a lawyer in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I had clients who were prostitutes, and there were Yellow Pages ads for escort services.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I have no idea. The only reason I knew about that is because I had clients who came to me for legal defense. And
mm-hmm.
they were never charged with prostitution, by the way. They always found something else to charge them with. Because this is one of the weird things about it. When prostitution is illegal, prostitutes suffer, but they very rarely get charged with prostitution. They get charged with possession of drugs. They get charged with stealing cars that they didn't actually steal. I have a long story about that. But they don't actually get charged with prostitution. But at that time, there was a business, and I remember at one point one of the women involved in the business wanted to ask me to consult with me about a contract to buy
mm-hmm.
the business from its previous owner, and I said that I didn't really know how to sell an illegal business, so I couldn't, help with
that's
that.
That's funny.
But,
yeah.
But apparently it was a going business, and it was in the Yellow Pages, so what are they going to do about that?
Yeah, there's really nothing you can, and actually you're right, because, okay, the San Bernardino County Sun, they had personal ads. I remember, because I was like 13, and they're like, now we're having expanded personal ads, and they were like saying you could pay this much, and I remember reading this ad, and I'm like, that is not a personal ad, and I was like showing my mom, and they were like, yeah, that's an ad for prostitution. I mean, it's happened, like, all papers in personal sections had ads like that forever, and I don't know why all of a sudden now, like, it's a problem in 2018. Like,
well, it doesn't sound to me as though they're really going after either prostitution or human trafficking, which are
different
things. But
yeah, they're two different things, of course. But it seems like they're just placing, like, to me, in the end, it seems like it's just another restriction, a way for people to maybe get together and make friends and communicate with each other, because at the end of the day, most of the people that actually use that section are just looking for friends or to meet people, like, you know, maybe romantic sort of way. Like, they're kind of just, those people are going to hurt. In fact, that whole paragraph that they have on Craigslist is about that. They're like, a lot of people have met their spouses. They've met church friends through that section, but now you can't use that section anymore because Craigslist is afraid of the liability of being sued because of this new bill. So they have to shut that whole section down, which to me is just very sad.
Yeah.
It's a sad day at site. Like, I don't think that was a bad section. There were some funny stories people would post on there. Like, now, in that section, you couldn't even just post. Sometimes people just posted life stories on there. I don't, oh, well. I guess that's just the way that the Internet's going right now. Like, they have to have more restrictions to keep us safer. From what? I don't know.
Well, I mean, so, do you think Craigslist had the option of continuing and they just got scared and other sites are allowing it? And
Craigslist is scared because they could be sued, because if you're a third-party site, like they even wrote in that paragraph, if you're a third-party site and somebody posts any kind of ad where it turns out that somebody was a victim of, like, the human trafficking thing, like an unconsensual relationship, the site will be held liable, not the individuals who posted the ad.
Be held liable for that. I don't think that, that does not.
The bill is the one that decided that. The people that signed on this bill, they're the ones that pushed for that. The thinking was that that way that they would prevent these sort of ads from being placed on Reddit and Craigslist. But at the end of the day, they're kind of hurting the people that were the prostitutes, because some of them said, like, some of them said, oh, well, at least they would be going on there and meeting people, and they could verify who they were meeting, a little bit more vetting. They wouldn't have, I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert on the topic, but ultimately the group of people that they were hurting the most was just regular people that wanted to meet friends, because most of the people that went there were just maybe, like, shy people or people that were new to it. And now, like, you can't meet friends on that site anymore for free. Like, now you have to go to some paid site to have a profile to meet people. But those sites, the paid sites, they're not going to be shut down or anything, you know, or held liable, I guess. Because I guess that's okay.
I don't see why. I don't really understand that, but.
It doesn't make any sense, but I'm not the one that wrote this legislation. It just doesn't make any sense. It's kind of odd.
Yeah,
it seems like
it's probably something not to do with either human trafficking or prostitution, but somebody is trying to get a monopoly on those kinds of ads, and maybe it's the paid sites. Maybe
that's kind of, that's what I was wondering too. That's another thing that's doing that I find kind of ominous, because they were talking about this one, I guess, group that they do, Botanica Analytica. I guess I would have to go back and remember its name. That was for helping campaigns, but Tinder's kind of the same way, but with people dating. Like, basically, they data mine your whole profile. They data mine the profile of your friends without your friends' consent, by the way. So, like, let's say somebody's on Tinder. They take your profile, and they match your profile against yours, and sometimes they're matching you with people that are secondary friends of your friends, or, like, they're taking your interests and your friends' interests, so it's a whole bunch of data mining. Like, Tinder has all sorts of issues, like breach security issues, but they're not worried about that. I mean, like, basically, anybody that's using Tinder, their friends' information.
Okay, I lost you when you said anyone that's using Tinder what now?
Okay, anyone that's using Tinder without their friends' consent, like, they could be furnishing that information, because anybody on their friends list will be used to generate a list of people that are considered, like, matches for that person, because what I found out just by doing a little bit of research on Tinder is that a lot of the people that were, like, I just looked at it once out of curiosity, but a lot of people that were matches for me were people that were friends of a friend that I had, or friends of a friend of a friend. So they're basically using friends lists and information of your friends.
Are we talking about Facebook friends list, or what?
Yes. We're talking about Facebook friends list, and we're talking about the likes on your page and the likes on friends pages, which is another reason I just don't like Tinder personally. Like, I'm just saying, like, they basically are, Facebook has given that consent for Tinder to use that information. It's kind of known that they do that. But yeah, basically, if you're using Tinder and your friend is connected to you as a friend, like, their information will be furnished to Tinder without them knowing about it, without their consent, basically. Yeah, and that's part of the reason I thought, well, I don't really like that Tinder site, because I just wasn't into it. But also, too, like, I noticed, like, the people that they projected as being your matches were people that were friends of a friend, or then, like, friends of another friend. Like, it was like they were basically just, like, scouring Facebook to come up with these matches. So you basically had to...
Did they take geography into consideration at all?
They take geography, they take your friends list, they take the interests of your friends, your interests, and they somehow compile it to make this list of people that... But it has a lot of data issues. Like, a lot of people feel that this site has issues because somebody on your friends list might not consent to that information to their... Let's say, okay, you're a woman and you sign up for Tinder, and then you have a man who's on your friends list. One of his friends that signed up for Tinder could automatically be generated as a match for her based on his interests, her interests, their interests, and shared interests and geography, but that friend might not want their information to be used that way. It's kind of like these other Facebook apps, by the way, like a lot of those fun ones that I'm kind of thinking about.
Any of those. They're phishing.
It's what it is. It's data phishing, but that's okay. For some reason, Tinder's fine, you know. They're not a problem. It's okay. They're not going to have any kind of impunities because of this new legislation, because I guess they assume that anybody who makes a Tinder profile isn't someone who's going to be a prostitute, which is pretty hilarious because I'm sure there's prostitutes on Tinder.
And for all I know, maybe some kidnapped person also. Okay, I keep having...
Am I disconnecting?
No. I just keep getting... comments. So Ubuntu was talking about whether apes are monkeys, and of course they're not. The great apes are different from the lower order monkeys, and we are great apes, and chimpanzees are great apes, and gorillas are great apes, and bonobos are great apes, and orangutans are great apes, and the rest of those other creatures, the ones with the tails, are monkeys. Okay. Sorry about that.
That's fine. I like your comments. I think either next week I need to just do it on the computer, but I already started, so I'm not going to stop. I'm sorry if it's cutting out too much. I really just wanted to see if I could get this to work, so that way if I ever went to, like, a coffee place or something, I would know if it worked. But apparently it doesn't work with my cell phone, unfortunately.
Okay, and I also had some questions about, somebody said, do you wear latex gloves? And that was kind of weird.
Okay, I can't think of what that is. I wouldn't even answer that question.
Yeah, I don't know. And the other thing was, do I go in with Beau every day? And yes, I do. 12 hours a day.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. I think somebody just... They want to know more about Beau. I noticed, like, a lot of your followers seem genuinely interested in chimpanzees, and they seem to enjoy your videos with Beau. So I think you have a growing fan base there.
Yeah, I do, but they don't seem to be interested in anything else. So sometimes it's hard to switch gears, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of have that problem too. Like, curiosity, I started the hair channel. That's always interesting. But it's not like I think about that 24/7, but a lot of people that subscribe to my channel, that's all they really talk to me about. Like, they don't really care about anything else I post. Is they just, like, want to know when I'm going to do another hair video. That's pretty much it. So I'm like, okay, that's nice. I appreciate it. But I think some people, like, will only subscribe to the channel for one thing. And then I used to do more crafting videos. And sometimes people just ask me to do more of that. It seems like some people just want one topic only. And they're not very good at expansive topics or multi-dimensional, you know, interdisciplinary topics. It's not something that most people are seeking out.
Yeah. I think they might have one thing that they're interested in, and then they cut out on everything else. And, you know, I've had this situation with a parrot, because it was Sword's parrot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he liked Sword, and he didn't like me, but Sword is off at college, and I had to take care of the parrot. So it took a while, you know, he was kind of bitey and and I had to go in and clean and all of this. So we had a breakthrough this week, and he suddenly likes me.
Aww.
So he was grooming my hand, and he was on my shoulder and all this kind of stuff. And so after that, I watched, and it just happened. I didn't make it happen. It just happened that way. But then I watched some videos. Let's see what. Well, whatever it was, faded away, and I don't know. Somebody said something. And on my phone, I can hardly see what it is that they're saying. But so I was watching some parrot videos. And a lot of the parrot videos are about how to train your parrot. Now, I'm not an animal trainer. And when I work with Bo, I also do not train him. You know, and when he learned how to spell in order to communicate, that was not training, okay? He doesn't do tricks. I didn't teach him to do any tricks. So the stuff that people enjoy watching with me and Bo is just general, you know, that we're affectionate with each other, that he's nice, and some people are just amazed by that because they've heard bad things about chimpanzees. And when I made that one video about Summer, the parrot, and showed that he was grooming me too, that, again, was not trained, you know, so if somebody were to ask, well, how'd you get him to do that? Well, I don't know. I mean, he just started doing that when he decided.
Animals, just, they interact like humans do. Like, after growing up in the mountains, and just in more rural part of California, because even though this is suburban, we have open spaces, animals will interact with humans. It's not, people think it's like you have to train them, but they have minds. They're curious. Like cats love technology. Like you wouldn't think so, but you turn on a computer and any cat just like, it's like right there and it's like staring. And some of them even like try to touch like the buttons on the computer. So, you know, animals aren't robots. So I think it makes sense to me that Summer like had a breakthrough with you and she was curious and wanted to get to know you more. Like maybe before she was scared because she was Sword's friend, and to me it makes sense. I think, you know, I don't think you have to train an animal for them to do certain things, and a lot of that's fake, by the way, because there was this one person that was a cat trainer where the cats would jump through the hoops, and she admitted, oh, I just give them treats and only one of them really performs. So I don't know, I think some of that's like staged a little bit too, like when they try to make it look like they trained an animal to do certain things. We don't really know anything they want.
I started watching some of the parrot videos. At the same time, I'm also watching human videos. So let's see if I can. And if you don't mind, what do you think about the whole Travis incident? Okay. Well, I think the Travis incident was very unfortunate. I also think that Travis was given a drug. I don't remember. I think Xanax or whatever. You should never, ever give a drug to a chimpanzee, try to drug them into submission, or thinking that if you give an antidepressant or something like that to a chimpanzee, that will calm him down. First of all, it doesn't even work with humans half the time, and if it was not prescribed for him, you should not give that to him. So I think that's part of what happened. You know, we see a lot of humans going really crazy, and some of those humans were under treatment for depression or things of that sort. Antidepressants, which don't always work the way you think they're going to work, and there are some medical reasons for that, which I'm not going to go into. But
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, you should never do that. And I think that it was a really unfortunate incident. It doesn't reflect on chimpanzees. It doesn't have to reflect on humans either, and that's all I have to say about it.
I think that's a good answer. Like, that sounds good to me. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, but what I was saying about, so I've been watching, look, I am interested in helping autistic people, autistic children to communicate, especially if they're nonverbal. And part of my research with Bo was hopefully going to also be applied to human beings with those particular communication problems. Now, so I've been watching videos of parrot training, and I've also been watching ABA, and that's Applied Behavioral Analysis is what it stands for. But it's the premier treatment right now for autistics. It's not what I would have used. When I had a choice between ABA and floor time, I used floor time for both. And the reason for that was because floor time was to try to entice the child to be more social and more communicative, but doing it on his level. You start on the floor. The child is on the floor. You go to the floor. You play with the child. You see what the child is interested in, and you try to entice the child to become more verbal and more playful with you, but starting out with you look and see where he's looking. You look there. You try to match eye contact or match interest, zone of interest, and then kind of entice the child while playing on their level. Okay, that was Floor Time. It's by Stanley Greenspan, and that's what I chose for Bo at a time when I was having trouble getting him to communicate more with me. And that's
that makes sense.
Okay, but ABA is different. It's like parrot training, and this what's so amazing is I watched some videos of children being ABA trained, and I watched some parrot videos of parrots being ABA trained. And they said that that's what they were doing. You know. So I don't treat anybody like that. Not a human being, but also I don't treat my animals that way either. What they're doing is they're, you know, there's a behavior that they want to get a child or the parrot to do, and they basically, you know, it started out as being kind of barbaric back in the 1940s or whenever when it was first invented, but now it's nonviolent. You know, there are punishments and rewards, but they're all nonviolent, okay? So that makes it politically correct, but
it's kind of like Pavlov's dog where they would give a reward similar to that concept.
Yeah, it's behavioral training, and it basically is, if you do what I want you to do, I'm going to say very good and give you something that you like. And if you do something that I don't want you to do, I'm going to, well, without being, you know, without it being exactly a punishment, I'm going to take away something that you want, or I'm going to turn away from you and you won't get my attention, which you might want. So it's psychological, it's very psychological, but basically that's what it is. You're training the child or the animal to do something that you want them to do, and they don't want to do it, but you get them to do it that way. And I just don't like that, you know. It's not my thing. Sorry, I didn't hear that. Could you maybe switch position? You're breaking up.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, but just...
Okay,
just
sorry. Okay. I think this was a really bad connection. I apologize. So I've just heard that behavior modification can cause emotional duress in certain individuals because they become dependent on that relationship and they become needy in a certain way to need that reinforcement. Like I've heard, I'm not an expert in that topic, but I don't think it's a good thing to use behavior modification. It's not authentic, I guess.
Yeah, but because then you have people saying, hi, how are you? Because they've been trained to say, hi, how are you? But then they might not stick around to listen to what you have to say because they didn't really, that didn't come from them, you know. It wasn't genuine. It wasn't motivated from inside them.
Exactly. And
I would almost rather, like, not that I want to always interact with cool and callous individuals, but I would rather, like, interact with a person who is actually just kind of, like, maybe a little bit hurt, as opposed to someone who would just be a little bit more, I hate to say fake, but, like, that's a complaint actually about American culture when people visit here from, like, the UK or Germany. They come to America and they're like, are people real here? Because everybody's high and they seem friendly, but I don't really feel like these people really like me, but they all pretend to like me. Like, customer service people or just people on the street, like, it leaves them genuinely confused because, let's say you're in Switzerland or the UK, like, people are a little bit more just themselves. They're not always like, hi, how you doing? And just this American exuberance that we have. I mean, I don't hate it because I grew up in this culture. I'm used to it, but I can understand it's confusing to someone who grew up in a culture where they're just themselves all the time. So there's all kinds of behavioral modifications in many situations.
Yeah. No, I actually agree with you. I mean, somebody else listening might not get the point, but the point is, maybe all of us are being socialized that way, you know, to say all the right things and smile and do that. And it's really not genuine in a lot of us. It's not just the people who are, you know, autistic or not neurotypical who are having problems with these social requirements. Maybe all of us are having a little bit of problems with being required to be fake all the time.
Yeah, a little bit. But also, too, sometimes, like, without going deeply into it, if you just happen to just be a little bit more to yourself and you're still polite to everybody, but you don't play, like, the fake political game where you're saying all the things that make people think you're real entertaining or amusing, like, sometimes people don't like you for that, which is interesting because I'm like, that's a little fake. It's like you're upset because someone's not playing the game, but you're all kind of playing the game. I just find that amusing. And so I would rather just have a few friendships. Like, it even goes into friendship for me. Like, I would just rather have a few friends than have many people that I call my friends, which in reality, those people are more like acquaintances because they're not really friends. They're just like this fake social interaction with each other. But I don't mean to get off the topic. You're talking about ABA. But I think it does apply to many different people in different situations.
It was not really off topic, so I appreciate the fact that you threw that in because, yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, it's actually really true, like, because I think everybody, to some extent, and if you don't play the game or you're just not hardwired to play the game or, like, you're more, like, individualistic or introverted and you don't want to, like, do a certain social requirement, people will, like, actually, like, hate you for it, which is funny. Like, well, for instance, like, let's say there's this party and everybody feels like they have to go to it, but nobody really wants to go to it. And then one person is just like, well, I'm not going to go. Like, people will talk bad about that person just because they did the thing that was authentic for themselves. They didn't go to the party that they didn't want to go to. But then everybody else went to the party and they complained about it afterwards. I'm like, that's just, to me, that's exhausting. Like, just either go to the party or don't. But don't, like, spend, like, the next 2 weeks complaining about how... It's just, like, there are these certain social dynamics, but it is all ABA because people feel that they have to be seen or say the right things or be in a certain social group to be accepted because that's how people are kind of socialized from a young age. If you're a kid and you're not participating in group work, your parents will get a note saying, Johnny's not participating in group work and he will not be successful in the workplace, which is ridiculous because...
I saw that as a parent at one time, you know, sort of always doing everything that she was required to do in kindergarten. But one day they told her she had to go choose a group to belong to and talk to people, and that was really hard. She didn't know exactly how she was supposed to do that. And to be marked as being disobedient about socializing is ridiculous.
It definitely is. And I never liked groups.
like, even up through high school, because, well, in middle school, it was always like, well, if you aren't the cool one, you're going to be chosen last for the group. And I'm like, okay. And then in high school, like, all those kids changed their mind, I guess, because I was getting a good grade. So then they wanted me to be in their group so I could do all the work for them. So I never felt like projects were a good thing. I always felt like I either was chosen last or I ended up doing all the work because nobody else wanted to do the work and I didn't want to fail the project.
Right.
So I never did, like, group projects. They're ABA completely. And I think some people think, well, actually, I know that's how our society is kind of structured in a way, that
right.
if you don't play the game.
Right. Yes. So all of that is true, and I totally agree with you. But it's funny, but all the creatures in my house, human and non-human, are not treated that way, so I would not know how to go about training a parrot. I can tell you, for instance, that Summer the parrot can speak. I've heard two words. Sword says that he says a few other words, but I've only heard those two words and never to
mm-hmm.
my face. It's not like I can say to him, say okay, and he'll say okay. But when I'm in the kitchen cooking, and he hears things, you know, sizzling on the stove, and then he'll say, okay, okay. So I've never even, I wouldn't be able to record him because I never know when he's going to say that.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Did Sword used to cook for him? Did she do something that was revolving around food that might elicit that reaction in him?
No, and he said other words to her. He's kind of a funny bird who says different things. I think he heard me saying okay, like recipe, and I okay, do this, and then okay, and then do that, okay, and he heard, so he
that's
heard
funny.
That, so he said that. But this other lady comes by and always says hi to him. And one day, and again, when she had her back turned, he said hi. You know, but he would never say it to her face.
It's just like he's kind of echoing things he heard, but it's not at a certain time period. It could be randomly, or maybe he likes the sound of sizzling. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But he also associates certain words with certain people, so he knows that okay is my word. But I've seen all these parrot videos where they actually get the parrot to say something, and then they'll say, oh, good job, and they give him a treat, and it's all trained. I would never know how to do that. In the same way, one of my problems with Bo is he's very smart. He says, you know, things. He spells out things that are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not on command, and I cannot know when it's going to happen, and I cannot prove it, and it's not just that he's using my hand. So lately I've heard the complaint that I'm not very scientific in this process, but I didn't realize that the problem would be the proof. I thought as soon as he could do these things, then it would be rather easy to show that he could. And
yeah.
And now I see that I should have been training him all along to do stuff, you know, to respond to quizzes and tests and multiple choice and things
oh,
of that sort so that I could prove what he knew, you know, but it just doesn't seem to work that way. And if I had been training him by rote like that all that time, people would have said it's not spontaneous and it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
So
basically complaining about that old adage about wanting to teach someone to the test, which they always kind of, no, I don't want to teach people to the test, but now for people and now for chimpanzees, and I guess not everybody can talk. Randomly or organically, that can't be expected for some reason because it deviates from the script.
I mean, I'm not hearing every word you're saying, but you.
Oh, so sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening with all of us. It's happening with our children. They're teaching them to the test. It's a terrible teaching method. It's something that actually makes them stupider than they would have to be.
Yeah, you can't think if you're just, like, trying to figure out, oh, what answers are right. I think it also encourages more cheating, like, among the student population, because they'll be like, oh, there might be a way we can find the answers, and instead of maybe if they had to, I don't know, write an essay about a project that they found interesting, as opposed to some multiple choice test.
Yeah.
And if you're good at figuring out a pattern, you could just be filling anything in and just, some people can figure out, I don't know, anyway. But yeah, that's interesting. I think though can do all those things. People just fixed it because, as I was saying, it just deviates from the that they have where they think that chimps can only do things this certain way, or a person can only prove what thing they doing something a certain way. Makes these rules in the first place. Like, who is the scientist that makes these rules, and what is their rationale or back behind it? That's my question. Like,
well,
what's the validity?
For the scientism of the thing is that it has to be a replicable result. You know, you have to be able to run a test, and you have to be able to run it again and again and again and get the same
mm-hmm.
results, then you believe it's true. So if I know that Bo made a pun one time and he never made that pun again, then that's just an anecdote, and it's not scientific proof. But if I were able to give him a battery of multiple choice tests and he got a certain score and his average score was above chance, then I could prove that he knew something. But a thing I could prove would be a great deal less than the fact that he made a pun, you know?
I don't think so. It's random, it's when it's inspired, it's like not like it was for the moment, it just happened. And that's one of the bigger, hilarious things I've ever said that my friends have told me. It was just like when I was watching something or something, it's hilarious. And then I would try and say it again later, and it just wouldn't have the same impact because I don't think about like this guess sometimes making fun of movies or shows and saying some random thing, but it's just off the cuff. I couldn't replicate that again every single time, but once in a while I really entertain people. But then I won't meet, I guess, like if I was comparing myself to like other types of ABA, I can't replicate somebody who's a good comedian where they can make somebody laugh all the time and entertain a crowd, but occasionally I can make somebody laugh by just saying a random comment or pun, but that's very occasional. So with Bo, like, maybe he doesn't want to all the time, right?
Well,
you
yeah, no, I'm not trying to sell him as a comedian. He's not a comedian.
No, I'm just saying for any kind of, like, comment he makes.
The point is that a pun is a game that we play
yeah,
in language. And so for an ape to do that who is not human shows that he has a great facility with language. Way above just saying, may I have a banana, please? You know, it's just a great deal more, and it's more than your average human being can do most of the
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah,
that's why it was significant he could do that, but none of us do that all the time on request. You know, if we're the sort of person who does it, you can't prove that we can do it like that. You can't
mm-hmm.
have a test for it. So someone online was asking if I thought Coco knew ASL. I've always believed the reports about Coco, so I have no reason to believe that she doesn't. But I am not personally involved, so I don't know. But I think so.
Yeah, that would make sense, right? I mean, I don't think there are other people who challenge that. Is that something that comes up?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning of your
sentence. Are there people that challenge that she is able to understand sign language or sign, Coco? because she's a...
There are people who are challenging all the apes. So all the apes who use language in various different ways are being challenged all the time. We're all under attack. So it would be very easy for me to say, no, she doesn't. You know, it's ridiculous. Obviously, I don't work with Coco, so I don't personally know, but I have no reason to believe that she doesn't. You know, I've read the literature, and it looks like she does.
I would assume that she does, and it seems, like, interesting that people want to refute that she wouldn't, unless they want to have some other counter study saying, oh, chimpanzees, like, what is their ploy in saying that apes are not capable of?
Look, there is a problem in the academic world, and one of the things is they're always playing that game. Humans are different from all the other animals because, and it used we have tools and they don't. But we now know that other animals have tools. We know the chimpanzees use tools, so and other animals as well. They're always looking for something, and right now that thing is language.
Wow.
Actually, a lot of indication, and I didn't know this until after I started working with Bo, but there is indication that apes in the wild also have languages of their own, not just languages like the ones where they acquired them from us. The problem with it is that we can't understand. They talk a lot, well, chimpanzees talk a lot faster than we do. They talk a lot higher than we do. So they're speaking, you may think that their speaking voices are low, but no, they make low sounds, but that's not their speaking voice. Their speaking voice is higher pitched than ours, and they talk faster, and their a syllable onset is faster, and that's where the consonants usually hide. So we have trouble hearing their consonants. We can hear their vowels. But we can't hear the consonants, so those of us who have been working with them for a while have an indication that there's more going on in the wild that we know also, okay?
Interesting.
But everybody who is anybody in ape language studies, and I'm not even considered anybody, but is under attack.
Wow.
And sometimes they try to get us to attack each other because we don't always agree on everything either, but there's no point in doing that, really.
No, definitely not. Actually, it'd be better if everybody kind of banded together in their field and would be like, okay, we might have different opinions about how apes do this and that, but it would be to your benefit for people to actually support each other in that field a little bit more.
It would be. It would be, and I'm trying to do that with some of my other primatologist friends. So it's hard because we're kind of prickly, like libertarians. You know, libertarians have trouble working together. Primatologists have trouble working together.
Yeah, that's true.
But we try.
No, I know you guys try. I'm just disappointed that anybody actually is trying to counter, like, the research that you're doing. But I kind of do remember that because I remember years ago, like, when you wrote Hubs on Hub Pages, people were just writing random comments saying, how do you know Bo does this? Humans are smarter than she can. Just random things as if they were somehow personally offended that...
Yeah, there was a bunch of... There was a group of people from Reddit who came over to give me a hard time, and some of them were really nasty. And they... They said really weird things.
Yeah, there's some weird individuals. I think somehow they personally that somebody or another person might be able to do something, which is odd. Like, why? To me, it's like a personal thing for them. Like, they must feel somehow insecure in their own life. Or they're just like little boys and girls. Like, just like juvenile type people. They have nothing better to do. But I don't see why anybody would challenge this research when you guys are working in this field and you have been showing the proof, and it would be to our benefit. We might learn something
from chimpanzee communities, right? Like, do you think we could learn something by
being
open?
And I think that anything that we learn about how they communicate will help us to learn how we communicate, would help us with humans who are having challenges with communication, all of that.
You know, one thing that I thought was real interesting, like, I had never thought about chimpanzee grooming. Like, it was something that was not on my radar. I had no clue that they did that. But then when I started watching some of your videos, I started reading a little bit more about it. I have so much more to read about it, but I just found it very interesting to read how they can groom for hours sometimes, and it's a way of showing, like, care and affection in a group. I just thought that was really fascinating. So is grooming part of the literature or research you guys do as well, or is that something that you discuss?
Yeah, I'm not into the behavioral stuff. She's asking, how do you become a primatologist? I'll talk about that later. The grooming thing is something that Bo insists on. A lot of the things that I do with Bo are not really what my choice for what we're going to do. It's his choice. And
what he wants to do, yeah.
It's what he wants to do, and since this is his life and he doesn't have a lot of, you know, other choices and other people to interact with, I have to go along with a lot of things that he wants. So, you know, sometimes I'll go in there and I've got a pen and I say, hey, let's write, let's draw. And he takes my hand, he starts grooming me, and he'll, he'll go on for hours. And, you know, what can I do? So I let him. So after a while, I started filming some of that. I did not think that was very important. You know, it was research.
To some people, yeah, to some people it's very important. Like, I was reading that, like, they can do it for hours. They can show, like, well, you know more about it than I do. But
yeah.
Community.
And it's a social cement. It brings people together, even if they were angry at each other a moment earlier. That's a way to make peace.
I just think that part's interesting, that it shows that he cares about you and you don't have to be chimpanzee.
Yeah, no, it really, you know, we're all capable of having relationships with people outside our group, people outside our species, as long as we get to know them. And, you know, and that's even true, you know, it's not just because Bo and I are both apes, because you saw what Summer was like. He wanted to groom me, too.
Yeah, see, like, there is, like, it doesn't have to be within the same species. And
yeah.
I can't, like, people, right. But they groom people the same way that they would groom another cat. And they actually say that.
Yeah, I might unmute you here so I can hear you.
I'm sorry. This is a really bad connection.
Okay. Well, I can hear you now. I don't know. I was about to unmute you, but now I can hear you. So this person was also asking, how do you become a primatologist? Well, primatologists are not people who have degrees in primatology usually. So you study something else and then you apply that to primates. So I studied linguistics. A lot of the other ape language people, such as Sue Savage Rumbaugh, she's a psychologist. She has a PhD in psychology. I have one in linguistics. Somebody else might have one in biology, or some other discipline that is in some way related. Anthropology is another one. So usually you get your degree, you get your doctorate, and then you apply what you know from your discipline to the issue of primates. And I even have I know a primatologist who used to work with primates that are non-human, and now when there are no non-human primates to work with, in the universities, she's studying Hispanics. And that sounds almost like an insult or something, but you know all human beings are also primates, so she's, you know, there's funding for studying Hispanics because of the identity politics, and so she's
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's funny. And maybe she's, like, legitimately interested in that culture. Plus, like we were talking about last week, sometimes if you ask people from the actual culture itself that are not living in America, they might view it differently, just like with the whole kimono controversy.
Right,
Japanese
right.
people
yeah.
are not offended if you are interested in their culture.
Oh, absolutely. She's an anthropologist, and she knows a lot about Hispanics because she's been
yeah.
up for a long time. But if you ask her, she's a primatologist, okay? So that
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so you don't have to have a degree in primatology to be a primatologist is essentially...
Yeah, that was the point, yes, because somebody was asking me that.
Mm-hmm.
So did you want to talk about Pecunia non olet? You had that on your list.
Which one did I have? I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
The Latin phrase Pecunia non olet.
Oh, yeah. See, I did. I had to think about it for a second because I know how to read it, but I've never said it out loud. I find it very fascinating because I was just doing some research about the Roman Empire, and I was watching some videos on YouTube, and then also how they continued to use urine to wash clothing, but specifically during the Roman Empire, they would collect the urine, and Titus considered it very offensive, but they said, does it smell? Like, does the money you collect from it smell? And how this was a method for washing laundry, and how it kind of sheds a new light on, like, what taxation is, like. So I was going to ask you specifically, how was that used in your book? I'd have to reread Our Lady of Cuffing, but how was that reference used in there?
Well, I used it actually in two of my books, and I was going to have it on Kindle for The Few Who Count, because The Few Who Count is falling apart, the one that I have that... the old one that I published.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Kindle is this kind of thing that turns itself off. And so even though I found the place in The Few Who Count, it's basically a place where Barman, the attorney, is talking to Hannibal, who is about to go public with his corporation. And
mm-hmm.
Barman is concerned that Hannibal will lose control of his business. So he starts talking to them about how can you sell them a part of Carthage Corporation. And Hannibal says, well, pecunia non olet.
Money doesn't
smell, so we can...
Yeah, it doesn't smell.
We won't be hurt by it, but actually they were hurt by it. So that was the one place... And the other place, and I really didn't intend to, it's not like I go around thinking, oh, where can I put pecunia non olet? But I didn't know that was going to happen, but it is on page 154, and it's in the flashback. You know the part with Arya? And
oh, yeah, Arya.
Yeah, so they're in the... They're at the Bryce Institute. It's in a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And Arya says that she got a new job. She says, got a new job at the Federal Reserve Bank downtown. They let me into their vault to smell the money. And and Mara is very excited about this. She says, they let you into their vault? Mara exclaimed. She was shocked. What did the money smell like? And Arya says, well, it was all printed on new paper, so it smelled like ink, like fresh ink, fresh off the press. And she says, you'd think it would stink to high heaven, but actually that money smelled clean. And then Mr. Sesame, who, as you know, is the Latin master, he said, pecunia non olet.
Oh, very crafty. Very crafty. But
in actuality, Titus did have a point because the, you know, all it did, I would imagine that would seem to wash laundry in urine, and not to go back to that original point.
No, once they turn the urine into ammonia, I don't know whether it smelled or not. What does ammonia smell like?
It smells toxic. It's a very, very noxious smelling. And actually, Titus did complain, but...
Oh, okay, that was laundry, but the thing is, they turned the... That was a tax, and they made money off of it.
Yeah, the money doesn't stink, yeah. Of course the money doesn't stink.
Right, exactly.
But the actual product stinks. That's... Yeah, it's just silly. It's silliness, of course.
Yeah. It is interesting to tax urine. You know, in Our Lady of Kaifeng, they had a different issue with human fertilizer. I don't remember. I don't know if you remember that part, but they had these latrines that used to be flush toilets, but after the Japanese took over, whatever, after the war, they didn't flush anymore. So they had a serious problem with their non-sewer, and so the Japanese had Chinese coolies come in and carry away the, you know, the sewage.
Yeah, the sewage.
Yeah, and Mara assumed that the Japanese were paying the Chinese to take away the sewage. But, in fact, it turned out that the Chinese outside the camp were paying for that because it was good fertilizer.
Yeah, they do use human fertilizer for, I actually knew that from other books I had read. They still do, to this day, use human fertilizer for their crops in China. It's a very ancient method for fertilizing crops.
See, the Japanese were just, they were making a profit off of camp because they were producing fertilizer.
It's just pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
I find that amazing. I just thought it was interesting. Of course, like, the final product is interesting, but it's still, it is, to me, like, the concept. Like, I know there were just ideas of hygiene, but at one time, the Romans were considered very clean because they actually would wash their clothing in that substance, whereas other people didn't wash as much, so that's an interesting aside. Because I guess hygiene, concepts of hygiene vary from culture to culture as well. But
yeah, I think right now we have an excess of hygiene. We have all these products that are supposed to kill all germs and all microbes, and that's not necessarily a good.
No, and that's not actually healthy. Like the antibacterial soap, like. New bacteria showed up, and some lady, I guess she got banned. Like, I don't know why she was in McDonald's place, but she was going there to collect samples to show how when you invent all these antibacterial hand sanitizers and gels, like, new bacteria will show up. And I guess she somehow collected all these different bacteria that were showing up because of these bacterial soaps and things, and they banned her from this particular McDonald's place because she was she kept coming in to collect samples, so, no, like, we have new strain things that show up, and it's also to sell products, because, like, well, for instance, with Listerine, like, they made up this thing called halitosis, which is Maybelline, it's not a real thing, it's just a marketing way to sell Listerine. Halitosis is not a real thing, but people thought it was real, they thought that they had this real system called halitosis. It's just bad breath, you know. You brush your teeth, like,
yeah.
It's interesting, though. Yeah, we do have a large variety of hygiene products. Some of them are excessive and might make things worse. But, yeah, you're right. Like, I think probably, well, for instance, with the hair thing, it's actually bad to wash your hair every day, but some people will push that you do need to wash your hair every day because it sells more shampoo products and more hairstyling products.
Yeah,
so.
And it's something that you really can't argue with people about. It's because once they get it into their head, hygiene is not something that people reason about usually. They just they have this kind of ooh factor. Ooh, that's gross, or something like that. So you can't argue about it.
No, you can't. But I've just found in my own experience, like, looking at what some of the other cultures do. Like, in India, like, with henna, like, hair applications and hair oiling and not washing your hair, like, every single day. Like, your hair actually is much healthier than if you wash your hair every single day and put 1,000 products on it. And I know that's just going on to, but it's funny, like, it's just, it wastes more money and time, but I guess it depends on which standard you want to go with, I guess. Like, whatever you want to do with your time and money, I guess that's your choice, you know. People are free to do that.
It's an individual choice, but actually people, they do it in groups. They decide what their standard is in groups, and then it's hard to move them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. For me, I always had my own ideas, like, when I was younger. Like, I never was that susceptible, but I did, to this day, I probably don't fit in with certain groups as well, because, like, for instance, like, the whole makeup thing, I don't wear lots of makeup, and I got told recently that if you don't apply makeup, you're not putting on your face, and you aren't somehow acceptable in society if you're not wearing a lot of makeup. And that's fine if people want to wear makeup, but, yeah, in order to be accepted by certain groups, yes, you do have to play by their rules, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm not even sure what the rules are in the workplace in the United States for makeup.
It varies. I think it's just on group dynamics. Like, in some groups, like, maybe you have a workplace culture where people are more individualistic and they're more accepting of others. But in some workplaces, maybe people feel that wearing more makeup makes you somehow socially acceptable. I've seen both. I guess it depends on what you want to do personally. I know some people feel like they fit in better. Well, that was actually one of the topics of the book, The Girl of the Limberlost. She was paying for her way to go through high school by collecting insect specimens and selling them to people. But she wasn't accepted right away because she was just wearing a dress that she'd sewn by herself. And once she bought all the latest fashion, everybody accepted her. Like, she could be acceptable, like, once she wore the clothes that made her fit in. So I guess if you fit in, it's easier to be accepted by a group. Of course, that's a given.
I was watching one of the Jordan Peterson videos. And he was talking about the Me Too movement with someone who was on somebody's show. And the other person was kind of antagonistic to his point of view. And he started asking, Jordan Peterson said, you know, when women wear makeup, that's almost like trying to make themselves more sexually attractive. Everybody knows that red rouge, it creates an attractiveness that is sexual. And when women wear high heels, the purpose of that is actually not to make them taller, but to have their posture a certain way, which is attractive to men, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, and the other guy was saying, oh, I didn't know that, or, you know, it's
that's funny.
Yeah, and so they were talking about whether the workplace was sexualized as a result.
Oh, yeah, sometimes.
So anyway, I don't have a big point to make, but it was interesting to see that confrontation because the other guy was just trying to pretend that there was nothing sexual about makeup and that women are not, in fact, trying to make themselves look sexy while they're working. But I really didn't understand that myself when I was practicing law. I didn't wear any makeup, but I was on my own. I had my own law practice, but I noticed that the young women in the most successful law firms were really heavily made up. And I had to ask myself, what is that there for? I mean, is this really part of the function of a lawyer to have that much makeup on? How does that help?
It doesn't, but I actually do think that, yes,
in the workplace, at school, there is, like, some sexualization with makeup. And even recently now, like, it's basically a marketing ploy to sell more makeup, because in this one, I don't know, this group of videos that would keep popping up on my feed, it was called The Power of Makeup. And essentially, these women were saying that they were more acceptable in their various workplaces when they wore makeup, because heaven forbid, like, if they didn't wear makeup, they weren't as attractive. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because if you're at work, isn't it based on your qualifications? I don't get it. I don't know. I guess
attractive unless you happen to be a prostitute. You know, other than that, you don't need to be attractive. I mean, you should be properly dressed, but.
Yeah, I don't really get it, but yeah, I do think that, and it starts young. It's not even in the workplace. Like, well, when I remember back, like, I remember, being in seventh grade, and like, this boy told me I would be more attractive if I wore makeup, and I was just I was 12. I didn't want to be more attractive to a guy, and I said, well, why would I want to do that? And he looked so perplexed, and all these girls are like, oh, you look so attractive to a guy because we're wearing makeup. And it seems to start pretty young, just depending on your social group. Maybe in my school, like, that's just the way it was. Maybe in other schools, kids are a little bit older. But I noticed it in, like, the social groups with the people that were more accepted and more popular. Like, by the time they were 11 and 12, they were already dressing like adults and wearing lots of makeup.
Yeah, they were play acting and getting ready for sexual roles, and maybe that's okay. But I what I mean is, when you're an adult and you're going to work, then you shouldn't have to. Yeah, you shouldn't be focusing on that at work.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I guess it's just because I hate to say it. They say that we live in this meritocracy, and everything's based on your merits and your skills, but I don't really think that's true at the end of the day, because I still think a lot of people seem like very swayed by looks, perhaps. And, well, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a Drew Carey show, like the pilot of Drew Carey was actually kind of about that, how he ended up hiring the woman that looked attractive as opposed to one that just looked clean and put together but had good qualifications. And I mean, it's always been around, I guess, but it seems more so now. It seems like makeup's becoming heavier, like with the whole Kim Kardashian thing. I've noticed, like, now all of a sudden, it used to be when people wore makeup, it was considered, like, more subtle makeup. But now, like, actually, even in the workplace in general, anywhere you go, like, this heavy, made-up, theatrical-style makeup seems to be what the norm is. It's interesting. I guess it's a cultural change.
Yeah.
Like, even more makeup than I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like, they're doing contouring on their face. Like, I don't know why you would need to contour your face.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yes. So basically, they want it to look statuesque, or they want to have, like, cheekbones that they don't actually have.
Yeah, exactly. But it kind of goes back to what you're saying. I don't really see how that's necessary if you're just going to work or even in college, like why you need to look. Well, and interesting, and you might find this interesting because you practice law. There was this man, I guess he sued his wife for divorce because he always saw her with makeup on. And then after they got married, he saw her without makeup. So he said it was a falsehood. But she looked like Sophie Suter for a divorce.
Oh, you know, that actually reminds me of something. I've been watching on Amazon Prime, there's this show called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Oh, have you seen it?
I've seen a little. I need to finish it off. I've seen like five episodes, but anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So in that show, they show her going to bed with her husband, and she's pretending that she's putting her head on the pillow. But then after he closes his eyes, she goes to the bathroom, and she takes off all her makeup, and she puts cold cream all over her face, and she lies down. And then the following morning, she wakes up really early so that she can go and put her makeup on, and then she lies back down. He wakes up, and he says, "Oh, I always have to wake you up." And she throws it up, and so he never sees her without her makeup. And what's funny is then in a different episode, you see that her mother is doing the same thing with her father.
Yeah, I remember that. And then I thought, well, I haven't gone that deep into it, but maybe that was just the cultural norm at that time period. I guess a lot of women did that, perhaps. Like, they went to bed with the makeup on. Like, I never heard about this. But did you hear about that being widespread with women doing that back in the 60s, maybe in the 50s?
That thing is actually set in 1958. So I don't know. I have no idea. But I think the idea was you were trying to keep your husband in total suspense as to who you really are. They should never see you the way you really are. You're supposed to put on an act. I imagine they didn't go to that length. That was probably, you know, it's a comedy. So
yeah, it's they're hiding. Yeah, it's comedic, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the ideal. So they had this ideal that you did not reveal your true self to your husband.
That's true. You have to always be the actress of sorts, selling it, because he might lose interest. Like, I remember that was another storyline, because, well, actually, one of the husbands, even though she did all that, he ended up losing interest in her, not to give too much away to anybody watching it.
Well, I think the point was possibly that's why, if you make yourself too perfect, then he'll never know who you really are.
Yep, that's true. But yeah, that's
that show, because you know, I was a fan of Gilmore Girls, and it's written by the same woman who wrote Gilmore Girls. So it has that.
Yeah, it's a good show. I need to finish watching it, but the humor is pretty funny in there. So, was there anything else that we didn't talk about that you wanted to address?
You know, there's that whole Google thing about they're going to allow fewer gun videos, and
that's strange.
Even safety demonstrations for guns.
Really?
So I don't know to what extent that's actually true, but that's what I heard.
That's a little strange, because I have no interest in that topic, but if somebody's not legally and it's just something that they enjoy doing, I don't see why it's a problem, because then eventually it goes back to me thinking about the whole water bottle thing. Like, how far do we go? Like, are we going to say next level? You can't buy a knife now, because you can't chop up a salad, because that might be dangerous too. I don't know. It just seems like, why are we restricting things? Like, because most people aren't going to do something bad just because they saw a video on YouTube, and they're just going to find another way to do whatever they want to do anyway. I don't really understand the rationale for banning, like, certain types of videos.
I think the rationale is that Google is a private business, and everybody in that community of people working at Google happens to be on the side of banning guns, but they're not going to, you know, they're not going to say that. They're just going to make it harder. And the thing is, I'm not a person who watches gun videos either. But what if they do that to chimpanzee videos? What if they decide, you know, that they're on the side of Jane Goodall? By the way, Jane Goodall doesn't think that anybody should own a chimpanzee. Well, I own a chimpanzee. So when I was receiving revenue from commercials on my YouTube channel, quite often it was her commercial that was on there. And that was okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
It's paying me, right? But
yeah, it pays you, but
no,
not a biggie.
I don't have the revenue, and what if they ban me, you know?
I think that Yeah, that is a worry to me also, too. It just goes to the whole pet thing, actually. I follow a vegan diet just for myself, but where I just don't agree with any vegans at all is that most of them think they should have a pet. They should have a cat or a dog. I don't think that you should talk to animals in nature, give them any kind of... But who makes these rules up? And just some of the most vile, mean people, like some of these people, they're really mean. They go after anybody's pet, and they say really horrific things to other human beings, but they're supposedly more compassionate.
Yeah, I would be...
It's very perplexing.
Yeah, I would be very suspicious of anybody who claims to be compassionate, and I don't care if they're liberals or if they're Christians or if they're whatever. Anybody who tells you how compassionate they are probably isn't that compassionate, because if you're really compassionate, you don't talk about it like that.
True. I actually have another friend that would say the same thing. She'd say, if you have to say that you're something, you're probably not that thing that you're proclaiming to be. Like, if you have to, like, and I'm kind of tired of that, by the way. I'm tired of people, like, saying, I am this, and I'm so good, and I'm so virtuous because I do this, this, and this. I'm like, okay, why don't you just live your life, do what you want to do? Like, do you need other people to follow you? Because if you do, it sounds like a cult to me, kind of. And I don't know. Like, it seems like they don't want anybody to own any kind of pet or any kind of animal. So I don't see why they get to make that decision. Like, who are they? Scientists.
Yeah, well, they think that they should get to decide how other people live. And, you know, as a libertarian, I disagree with that very much.
I just think anybody, I agree more with, like, just a libertarian. I think anybody should be open to just letting other people live their lives, because anybody can do bad things, and they can do it with something that's perfectly legal. And I feel like banning a certain behavior is not going to make people more saintly. It's not going to prevent that behavior. You need to deal with the people that are the criminals when they commit the crimes. You don't punish the rest of society because of a few bad apples. But I feel like all these new bans, like on websites or when they take a certain thing away, it's basically just punishing everybody else because a few people do something illegal. That's what I feel like at the end of the day.
I agree.
Yeah, and I'm a little disappointed with it, but I guess they didn't want to be sued, so of course they're going to take away that section, so, or take away a certain feature. So maybe that's another thing, too. Maybe YouTube, even if they were neutral on that issue on the gun issue, maybe they're afraid of, like, some sort of legal ramification. I'm wondering if they allow...
I think that's true in the case of YouTube. YouTube is...
It's not.
Wrong. YouTube has such a monopoly on everything that I don't think they're afraid. I think
they're not afraid. They choose what they want. But then, let me ask you this. Why is it okay for them to have, like, what is basically considered porn videos as long as you're 18? Like, there are some videos on YouTube you can watch like that. There are music videos that glorify violence. And then anybody wants to, I have no interest in guns. I don't really care, personally. Like, I just think banning everything is not going to make society better. But how come it's okay to, like, promote movies where they do all these same things, but then you want to ban the legal form of that, so the people can't go and find it illicitly on the black market and do what they want to do? I mean,
yeah,
people still will find things to commit whatever crime they want. Well, like today or yesterday in France, there was a hostage situation with the gun, and France has, like, some of the strictest gun laws in the EU, but somebody still obtained a gun and took people hostage and killed people. So you're still able to do that despite all that legislation. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and as far as Google's bans, you know, it's kind of two-faced, and they don't seem to really care about that. I'm sure that if it's a movie where somebody's mm-hmm. shooting a gun in the movie, they'll allow that. But if somebody has a video where they're showing safety procedures, and the gun has a magazine with a certain number of rounds, then that's banned. And we're talking about safety.
Yeah, I don't. That to me is perplexing. So it's okay to have a movie where in most of the movies it's violent. Like, let's be honest. And like, if it's a movie that's talking about a historical event, okay with that, because I know you're portraying history. But a lot of these movies are just fantasy violence.
Yeah, and they're very violent. They're even sadistic, you know?
That's disgustingly, like, just, but that's okay, but then somebody has a safety video, and some of these people are actually, like, they're in law enforcement. Not people that know what they're doing. I don't think that they have any nefarious intentions. I don't see why, and I don't even have an interest in the subject at all, but why do their videos get taken off? Platform. Just doesn't seem right.
No, it's not right. It just seems to be one thing after another, and I hope
mm-hmm.
this trend goes the other way soon, because it's depressing.
But I think what we need to do is just like shine a light on how toxic it is to things that follow Trump. And how spending all your time criticizing him, and maybe just realizing that the more independent ideas and presidential debates, for instance, why do we not want? That was interesting. They blocked all the other third parties from participating in the presidential debate, and then afterwards, when Trump won, they said, "Well, it's because of the third parties that." How could it be? They weren't even allowed to be at the debate. That's really interesting. How do you come up with that logic?
Well, it doesn't make any sense. But then you can just as easily say it was the Russians' fault, you know. So you can find all sorts of ridiculous excuses for what happened.
Yeah, but it's just who won that election. And if people were willing to be left on allowing third parties at presidential elections, maybe we will have a different result this time. Maybe it can take off in the system. Maybe it can change if people are willing to change the dynamic being divided and fighting for not really. Anyway, you know, if they're open to maybe, well, with Austin Peterson, he's still running, right? Is he still thinking about running for president?
Well, no, he's not running for president. He's running for the Senate. He's going to run against Claire McCaskill for the Senate,
mm-hmm.
the Missouri one.
Well, yeah, that part I remember you told me, but he's not, like, saying in 2020 that he wants to run for president. He hasn't, like,
said, and see, the thing is, the Libertarian Party didn't treat him that well, and it's not clear that he will run as Libertarian if he does run, and it's
mm-hmm.
not clear that the Libertarians want him. It's really a mess. This is part of why I'm depressed about all this, is that even when I find somebody that I like and I would like to support, it's very hard to do it.
Yeah, it makes it difficult because they want to get together for him, and then the person that they did support, like Gary Johnson, it seemed like he kept burning his bridge a lot, like he would just say random things. And people were starting to ask him, is he even running for president? And that kind of, like, he was really gaining a lot of momentum for a while, but then his vice president didn't really help either because he says vote for Hillary, right? So the whole thing was kind of...
practically said that, and then, you know, we all asked him, are you going to betray us? And he totally betrayed us. And he said, oh, well, I'm never leaving the, the Libertarian Party, I'm Libertarian for life, so if you mean leaving the Libertarian Party, I'm not going to betray you. He had to modify it that way.
That's interesting. And you could say he was a friend of Hillary Clinton, so I guess at the end we kind of knew the answer. I guess, like, they're in the same social circle, so maybe he had an interest in being the vice president of a
circle. Well, they all in those circles because, you know what, Trump was a friend of Hillary Clinton, too.
That's true. Like, they were all friends, but everybody wants to fight over them. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, whatever they say, and let's just all fight. But it would be nice to see someone like Austin. It doesn't even have to be Austin, but just maybe if starting now, maybe if somebody could start working on a party campaign of some kind, unless he thinks that he would have a chance in the Republican Party. But to be honest with you, I don't think he would have a good chance right now with being president in the Republican Party unless he could somehow maneuver him in the primaries. Like, if he runs to the Republican, are you not thinking that far ahead right now?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I think that there is a problem right now in the question of whether he'll get out of the Republican primary to be running in the general election.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really will be able to go against him, because even though he can be wacky, usually being the sitting president of that political party pretty much ensures you that you're going to come out of the primary. So I think he's awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking about this because I know you're interested in him. And for any, I think I'm just going to vote for a third party person next time around.
Yeah, I have no idea what the next time around for the presidential election is going to be like. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't have a horse in the game. You know, I just, I was so hopeful in 2016, and right now I'm not hopeful at all.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that it can change. Like, it would be nice to have, like, something more positive, more liberty conscious.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, we'll see. But that, what did you say about the school issue, or?
So you're cutting out, so I'm not here.
Sorry. I said, was there anything else that you wanted to add about the Google issue, or was that it for that part?
That's about it.
Okay. All right. So we probably should end here, I'm thinking, because we're almost about 2 hours into our little live stream. But it was interesting. Yeah. Sharing all your different thoughts about these different issues, especially that bill and what it really means. That's a good point.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought it up because I really would not have been thinking about it if you hadn't. But yes, hopefully we'll be able to put together a good live stream where both sides are heard. You know.
Okay, definitely. I'm sorry if my phone cut out. I hope it's not too bad for your recorded talk.
Yeah.
Put the video together this time. So I hope it doesn't sound too bad. But anyway, have a good night, Aya.
Okay, good night, Julia. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
What? Why are you looking at me all weird? Did I say your thing?
I think I said something weird.
I don't want to get a brain tumor.